Well, first of all, I want to thank you for inviting me to participate in this. I'm really excited to share with you a little bit about our training program. How many know what a Pathway to training program is? So just a few, okay. And I also want to thank my partners in crime back there, Abby Smetana and Katie Walk. She has a new last name, so I'm trying to get used to that, but for their help with this as well. I have no financial disclosures. And just want to briefly tell you there's three pathways to becoming a board certified lactation consultant. Pathway one is the typical route that healthcare providers go, so nurses, doctors, dietitians, where they have 1,000 hours of clinical and 90 hours in the classroom. Pathway two are programs that are housed in academic institutions, and they have 300 hours of clinical practice and 90 hours. So they're very intense and usually in a shorter period of time. And then pathway three is the directly supervised mentorship. This is often how LHA League leaders and peer counselors go through. So they find a mentor that will be joined at the hip with them for 500 hours. And they also have to have the 90 hours of didactic. So our program was the dream of Mary Rose Tully. And she had started this project in the curriculum before she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she never saw her first class finish, but we know she did from heaven anyways, because they were very successful. So in 2007, Ilka had come to UNC to Miriam and Kathy Alden and Mary Rose and asked them to develop competencies in a curriculum. And so they started that, and it got turned into a Pathway 2 program. In 2009, the first class went through, and they originally only went to one hospital. That expanded to five hospitals between 2009 and 2013. When I joined CGBI, we decided to start looking at other factors. We knew we wanted to increase the class size, but we wanted to do it with care. So we wanted to make sure that we were picking sites that were good sites, where they were going to learn best practices, and also wanted to start to address some of the disparities in our state. So this shows you the class size, how it changes. We have all kinds of different students. That is one of the beauties of our program. We have anthropology MPH students that come in, very varied backgrounds, MDs, nutritionists, speech therapists, midwives, social workers, doulas, everything, the gamut. And it leads to such an enriching experience for those students, because they're learning from each other throughout the school year. So for the clinical experience, you can see up there, they do one clinical day per week during an academic year, and then they have a 3-hour class on Fridays. And so that gives you the breakdown of how we meet the hours. We have a phased learning approach. So phase one is observation of the IBCLC. In phase two, they start to help. And that usually starts around October. And by February, they are ready to move into independent practice, where they're just precepting with their IBCLC. And the classroom follows the same kind of pattern. They get general education, start to learn more communication and assessment skills, and then they start to get into complex situations in the spring. So this is just a picture of the class where they are playing with equipment, because when they're in the hospitals, they don't get a lot of chance to learn that and play with all those things. So we try to make sure that it's happening in the classroom too. All the competencies are both taught didactically and then in the clinical. For admissions, they have to do a program application, provide transcripts. We do have to make sure that they've had the IBLC required prereq courses, which can be taken at UNC or taken through community colleges if they don't come to us with all of those classes. Typically, if it's a nurse or a dietitian or MD, they've already had all of those. But some of our other non-traditional students that aren't healthcare providers have to make some of those up. In terms of budget, we have Doug Tully gave us a scholarship fund to start working with the students in Mary Rose's honor, and so we are able to give about 3 scholarships a year for $2,000. They pay tuition for classes, and then they pay a practicum fee that actually funds the whole program. There are different fees based on where they're coming from, and this is another thing that we discovered, that UNC had an interinstitutional agreement with several other universities in the state where you can take a class for free at UNC just by signing the paperwork if you're a student at one of those other universities. And so we're trying to leverage that now to spread the wealth and get students outside of the triangle into our program. We have 15 didactic instructors, and it's exciting because our students are learning from some of the best. They have about 6 lectures from Dr. Allison Stubbe per year. We have a speech language pathologist, Joan Comrie. So there's all these people that they're learning from that are doing the research in the field and in clinical practice, which is wonderful. We now have 7 locations with 37 clinical preceptors in those sites, and the lead instructor from each site is who I communicate with. So they give a lot of hours to our program. Our program also covers public health competencies, not just core competencies in lactation. And that's the beauty of being in a school of public health, being embedded in the MCH program. Some of you know that by 2017, all of the Pathway 2 programs have to be accredited by KHEP and LRC. And so this is quite a process. And I don't have results for you yet, but we had our site visit last week, Thursday and Friday, and we're the first of the Pathway 2 programs to go through. So for better or worse, they're learning from us and we're learning from them, and we should be hearing pretty soon about that. The self-study was a really important process of that because we could look at our program with a new lens and think about things that we were missing. And so we standardized all the presentations. We have a 38-page handbook now that explains all of the requirements. We started to really make sure those public health competencies were embedded, and we've created different tools and student evaluations for the facilities. So in terms of growth of IBCLCs in North Carolina, we have 601. We're the 4th highest state in the country behind California, Texas, and New York. And if we look at the proportion, so we're looking at the new IBCLCs, because of course when we get that report, that's recertifying and new. And then you can see the proportion of those that are MRTTI graduates. So in 2011, there was a lot of people in our state that sat for the exam, new people that had sat for the exam, and only 10 of those were from our program. But if you look at 2014, 10 came from our program, 10 of the 13 new IBCLCs. We have 100% pass rate at this point. I expect that to fall. At some point, it will fall. And we talk to the class because they feel a lot of intense pressure about the fact that we do have that, and say it's going to happen and it's okay and it's no big deal and we'll help you pass the next time. Just wanted to share with you, this is our class. So one of the areas that we've been working really hard on is diversity and making sure that women of color have opportunities to participate in our program, and this class, half and half. And that is an amazing feat for us. We're really excited. One of our students runs is a co-facilitator of Black Women Do Breastfeed Facebook page. And so we just think that someone like that accepting them into our program is going to make a huge difference because they touch so many lives, even though they're not the non-traditional. They're not the nurse, the doctor type person. So we are trying to increase the number that are coming through those interinstitutional agreements. We're actively promoting it as an asset to the MPH and MSPH. We have an MSPH program in maternal and child health for med students. So between the 3rd and 4th year of med school, they can take a year off and get their MSPH, and they can do this program as a part of it. And it counts as electives towards their degree. So they can come out being an IBCLC before they finish their medical degree. Wow. So that's very exciting as well. We do have an increased need for scholarships. We look at different sources. We've also been able to use Kellogg funding towards some of that. So we're maximizing what we have. We also do mapping. So this shows you, in terms of the lactation consultants in the state, those dark blue squares are the counties where we have heavy, heavy lactation consultants. So between 41 and 109 lactation consultants in those dark areas. My goal is not to continue to flood the triangle with lactation consultants. We want those outer edges where we have the light colors. So it's not realistic in the western part of the state for a student to come to class every Friday at UNC. We've thought about online, but we feel like there's something that happens in that group where they just connect, they're the best of friends, they're watching each other's kids by the end of the school year. And so we really want to make sure that that in-person piece stays intact. So what we're looking at now is how can we mentor other universities to start Pathway 2 programs. And so when you look at the hospitals, that was the other piece. There were these five clustered in the triangle, and that's where we were putting all the students. And we really want to make sure that they're getting a varied experience because it's a different population. We're like a bunch of nations in a state. And so we wanted to make sure they were seeing other parts. So we added Vidant Medical Center in the east, which serves a 29-county catchment area of very rural, poor mothers and babies. And so we wanted them to get that experience. The other criteria was, how baby-friendly is this hospital? Because we don't want to send our students to a place where they're going to pick up bad habits and not learn best practices. So that hospital is baby friendly. If a hospital isn't baby friendly, to be a new hospital in our program, they have to at least be participating in the state designation program. So we also added another one, the other yellow one that's kind of middle in the middle. That's Randolph Hospital. Great experience. Small hospital, one lactation consultant. But those students get to help deliver the baby, put the baby skin to skin, talk to the mom while she's laboring. So it's a very different experience than when you're in a massive hospital, you're a part of the lactation team, and you're coming in hours after that baby is born. So it's pretty exciting that they get such a varied experience. And then where those little flags are is a Pathway 3 program. And then there's also the historically black college called Johnson C. Smith. And we're working with Dr. Mead to establish a program there with the help of the Charlotte Rose Group. So we're telling them, steal from us, steal shamelessly, we want to help you. So they're not, it's not competition. We're not going to get a lot of students from the Charlotte area. So we're working together to try to address those issues. So we look at the number of students, how many can we handle, really handle. 14 is really pushing it for the sites that we have. We look at the geographic location. Where are they going to stay and practice, too? That's important. We ask things like that when we're talking to them. We want to optimize their learning environment and also look for clinical experiences needed. So our students also rotate with the WIC program. They have to spend 6 hours in a WIC clinic. They have to go to mother-to-mother support groups. They have to go to a coalition meeting. So they're getting a really varied experience. We also have mapped where they're employed. So if you look, again, it's in the triangle, and we need to push them out. So we have started a closed Facebook page where we can start sharing job opportunities and get that information out to them, pushing them out into the eastern region and into the west. So I already talked about the collaboration we're doing with Johnson C. Smith. We're working on increasing scholarship opportunities through different groups, and we're really prioritizing our recruitment and our enrollment to people that are coming from those areas of the state. And so I'll answer questions when we have time at the end, but I just wanted to share that with you. And if you have interest in a Pathway 2 program, happy to talk with you about how to start getting that started, and we are willing to share anything that we have to help you. Okay, thanks.
We have a couple minutes for questions right now. So, are there?
I do. Have you? I have very mixed feelings about IVCLC's new extensive college education requirements, because I think we're losing some things by requiring that. And you know, a general human phys class might have 1 week on breast and mammary tissues, and the rest is on other things, which are important, but it's not as central. Do you have the opportunity where you could kind of look to see those folks that are from healthcare who would have had that versus the folks who maybe take it later? Are we really getting differences? It doesn't matter. Is there something about that? Because I see it in colleges a lot. We require a lot of prereqs without a lot of theory as to why, but it certainly pads our budgets well.
For the purpose of the recording, question around some of the prerequisites coming into the IBCLC program and whether or not there's differences, and is there evidence to back up some of those prerequisites?
So I would say in terms of the exam passing, obviously we're not seeing that there's a difference. But one thing we do is it's optional, but we ask our graduates to send us back the scoring, so that we know what they're scoring are on in those different domains. One thing I do know is that the students that don't have that background and maybe only took a short course through the community college or whatever, where they struggle is medical terminology, the critical thinking skills of putting it all together, and then getting the respect of the other providers in the hospital setting. So we try to work with those students throughout the year, doing just a little bit more to mentor them and make sure that they're catching up. That's what we notice compared to the traditional healthcare provider. It doesn't mean that they don't have an awesome skill set, because they're really good at other things that clinicians aren't, like talking to mothers and really communicating and building relationships. So they have strengths, but they don't necessarily have those kind of math type of strengths. And so we do work with them. We have evaluations throughout the year where we're gauging where they are, the feedback from the instructors. They do clinical presentations in class, so I can kind of see what's churning in that brain, and we meet with them and try to help them catch up if they're behind.
One more question.
Real quick, you're on-site, your 37 on-site clinical preceptors, are they compensated for the extra time it takes to be working with your students?
So they are not in the money area. So the question is, are the 37 clinical instructors compensated? We run on a shoestring budget, clearly, because we only have that clinical practicum fee. We don't really see the money coming from the tuition. That never filters down. So what we do for them is we send them to conferences. So we'll send someone from each facility to the Lactation Consultant Association meeting in North Carolina or to ILCA or some conference. We also update all their resources, like every time Hale comes out or something like that, we'll send it to all of the sites. Most of the sites are teaching sites already, so it's a part of their service.